You are listening to the Better Together podcast, brought to you by the National Association of Free Will Baptists.
Welcome to the Better Together podcast, where we look for ways we can work together to advance the cause of Jesus Christ around the world. Today, I have with us Dr. Ryan Burge. You probably have heard of him. He's the author of The Nuns and also a recent book about 20 myths about religion and politics. If you've not checked out his Twitter account or you've not checked out his website, ryanburge.net, I want to encourage you to do that. But Dr. Burge, it is such an honor to have you here with us today. You are the man when it comes to graphs and when it comes to information about the nuns and all things religion. So thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Eddie. I made 1,457 graphs last year. So it is my entire life at this point, it feels like.
Well, we need to tell our listeners that you are a professor at Eastern Illinois University. You're also a pastor in the American Baptist Church. And so you pastored that same church 15 years, right? Somewhere along there?
2006, October 2006 was my start date. So over 15 years now.
So that is pretty cool. And there's this tweet. So we've got to get you to tell about that. What is the tweet that got everyone to notice Ryan Burge and like, you know, I need to check his book out?
Yeah. So, it was March of 2019 and I was at work teaching and I see all my friends start saying, oh, the GSS is out. That's the General Social Survey, which is like this survey has been going on since 1972. It's really like the Bible of like data social scientists people. And then the new version had come out, the 2018 wave had just been released. You know, it takes a while to compile and organize and stuff. And so everyone was tweeting all these graphs and I was like, I got to tweet a graph, but I live 100 miles away from my home and my work are 100 miles apart. So I was driving home the whole time thinking, I gotta be the first one to get this graph out. Cause I wanted to look at what had happened in religion from 2016 to 2018 and see how things had shifted over time. So get home, it's late. I got to get my kids in the bath. It's getting bedtime for them because they were young at that point. They were like 7 and 4. And so, you know, we had to get them in bed for school. And so, you know, I throw them in the bathtub and I run downstairs and I start making the graph and I had to run back upstairs and, you know, make sure they're not drowning each other and all those things. And I throw it together real quick. And I just tweeted it out real quick. And I say, there's big news. The nuns now are the same size as evangelicals or Catholics, which means they're tied for the largest religious tradition in America. And I tweeted it out and started getting my kids ready for bed, you know, got their jammies on, read them a book. All of a sudden I looked down at my phone 10 or 15 minutes later and there's like 30, 35 retweets. And then I looked down an hour later and it's 65. And I wake up the next morning, it's 150. And then it just goes and goes and goes and goes. And then all of a sudden the world started knocking on my door. I talked to CNN. I talked to the New York Times. I talked to the Washington Post. I talked to the Times of London. I was on the front page of Reddit. We got 70,000 upvotes. I was on C-SPAN on Easter morning in 2019 talking about religion in America. So it's like this one little tweet kind of opened this whole world up to me. And then when Fortress approached me later that year asking if I had any book ideas, I was like, well, why not write about the thing that I'm basically known for at this point and that people want to talk about? So, you know, writing about the nuns just came naturally from the idea of why not write a book that people want?
Yes. And all of us in the church world who are trying to reach people and we're looking at that graph and we're all like falling out of our chairs and we could kind of see it coming, but it's like, oh, it was a upsetting thing. But part of what the graph and your work since has done is it's helped us understand who the nuns are. So let's talk about that a little bit. So they're not just atheists or agnostics, are they? Who are the nuns? And that's why to really understand it, they got to get the book. Yep. And you can't just get the audible version because you've got to see the graphs, right?
Graphs. My book doesn't work well for audiobooks, unfortunately. So if you put the nuns together, there are three groups, atheists, agnostics, and the third group called nothing in particular, which is actually what the survey response option says, nothing in particular. It's the last one at the bottom. Basically, none of the above is what I call it the shrug category, right? Where it's like, I'm not this and I'm not that. Other scholars have called it, there's a difference between being non-religious and being secular, right? So atheists, agnostics are secular. Nothing in particular are just non-religious. They don't care either way, you know, one way or the other. And so if you think about the nuns, you put five of them in a room, one's an atheist, one's an agnostic, and three are nothing in particular, right? Mm-hmm. So most nuns are not atheists or agnostics. I think we create this boogeyman, especially in Christian circles, mm-hmm. of like the atheist philosophy professor at college is going to turn all your kids into like Nietzsche loving, you know, atheist young people. The reality is that only about 6% of Americans are atheists and another 6% are agnostics. And interestingly enough, if you look at younger people, like 18 to 22 year olds, only 7% of them are atheists. So they're not, young people are not more likely to be atheists or agnostic. The big hunk is this nothing in particular group. And they're about 1 in 5 Americans fall in the nothing in particular category. They're probably the, depending on how you want to slice up Christianity, they're probably the largest religious group in America today, the nothing in particulars, 1 in 5. They were 14% in 2008. They're 21% now in 2020, growing 50% in the last decade or so is really exponential growth when we talk about religious demography. And they're just so different. Nothing in particulars are versus your atheist. For instance, 47% of atheists have a 4-year college degree. It's only 20% of nothing in particulars. They're the least educated religious group in America today. So you can't think of them, you know, they're not sophisticated people who are rejecting religion for like big philosophical or, you know, theological reasons, that they are just not thinking about this thing. So 60% of nothing in particulars make less than $50,000 a year compared to only 40% of atheists. So even economically, they're much further behind. So, you know, they're really, it's like apples and oranges. When we think about the nuns, you should really not be thinking a whole lot about atheists. There are different kind of social categories than nothing in particular. And plus, there's 3 times as many nothing in particulars as there are atheists. So we need to be focused on the right part of the population.
So they're low hanging fruit, and they're not as hard to reach as many of our people often think, are they? They're not anti-religion like the atheists are. What are they really like? You mentioned socioeconomically or how much yep. money they make, and educationally, not that involved in their community, are they?
They're checked out. I call them left behind, left out, lost, overlooked. Unmoored from society is that they don't do the education piece we just talked about. So very few of them went to college, or I think a lot of them actually went to college and just couldn't hack it for whatever reason, you know, economically, or they just couldn't deal with coursework. But they're also politically very disengaged as well. They don't do things like go to city council meetings or school board meetings or go to protests or rallies or even something so small as like putting up a yard sign, a political yard sign, which takes, you know, nothing. They give them to you for free. You just put them in your yard. They feel like nobody is looking out for them and no one is thinking about them. And so they're really just disconnected from all the sort of things that hold us together, create what we call social capital, these bonds that kind of make us feel like a community and part of something. But here's what's really interesting about nothing in particulars. So I looked at some panel data, which asked the same people the same questions across a period of time. So you can actually see change at the individual level.
Yeah.
And in 2010 and 2014 was the starting point and the stopping point. Amongst atheists, almost no atheists become Christians 4 years later. It's around 1%. I'm not joking. It's like 1%. Mm-hmm. And among agnostics, it's 3.5%. So higher, but still, you know, not a very good yield. Amongst nothing in particulars, over a quarter of them come back to religion over a 4-year period of time. And of that, 16% become Christians over a 4-year period of time, right? So a lot more movement amongst this nothing in particular. And think about this. This is 25% of 20% of the general population. So you're talking about like 4% of Americans are nothing in particulars who go from being nuns to being somes over a 4-year period of time. You're talking about atheists are 1% of 6% of the population. We're talking about a rounding error in American society. So for all the stories you hear about, I convinced an atheist to become a Christian, that is just incredibly, incredibly rare. There's a much more fertile field out there, the nothing in particular group, that will listen, that actually do go to church every once and again, who are not turned off by religion and are willing to listen to the message and actually come back to a religious community if offered one in a way that makes sense to them.
So they're not giving blood. You've mentioned that before. You know, they're not involved or engaged in their community. They're feeling kind of perhaps left behind, left out. So it sounds like what you're saying is if I'm in a church, in a community, if I'm kind of reaching out to them, I'm trying to engage them, they're likely, many of them, to reciprocate or to be interested. And you just mentioned the panel survey. You're seeing that many of them are coming to some sort of religion, especially Christianity, over time, perhaps because they've been reached out to a little bit. They're not putting their hands up saying, no, this is not for me.
they're not going to have a huge debate with you about theology. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That what they care about is, am I feel like loved? Am I feel supported here? Do I feel like I'm part of a community? Are these people willing to support? Are they judgmental? Are they willing to work with me? Are they willing to help out, you know, watch my kids, drive me to the hospital? You know, the kind of the basic things that make life less terrible is the kind of the things these people want. And unfortunately, remember, we just talked about, they're the growing segment of society, going from 14% to 21% over time. We're talking about tens of millions of Americans. And by the way, amongst young people, right? So 18 to 20 year olds who do not go to college, 50% of them are nuns now, and over 35% of them are nothing in particulars. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a huge problem, not just the way it exists, but it's only going to grow in the future as these young people age into further into adulthood.
Yeah. So let's kind of get in that a little bit. You talk about that a bit, jobs going overseas. You give, I think, a good analogy, or it's a good example of what's happening with secularization and so forth. So we're not going to see nuns disappear. We're going to see more nuns, aren't we?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, globalization. In the book, I think globalization is like this thing that both Democrats and Republicans say, I'm going to bring jobs back to America, and we're going to do these, you know, all these subsidies and this, that, and the other thing. And you know what happens? The jobs leave anyway. It's like a wave washing over America. And, you know, manufacturing jobs are just going to go overseas because it's cheaper to make stuff in other countries versus America. The right response to that, I think, is not to try to stop it, but try to pivot and find ways to work in a new economy that's going to exist in the future, not be stuck in what was the economy from 50 or 60 years ago. I think American Christianity needs to kind of take lessons from that idea. You cannot stop secularization. It was almost inevitable, I think, in America. It's weird to think like Germany's 8% religious and America's, you know, 65, 70% religious. Like those things are just incongruent with each other because, you know, Germany's an advanced economy. Like we're an advanced economy. We were going to become more like them. It was just inevitable. The reality is, though, the world we're facing now is a world where Christianity in America is not the generic religious choice anymore. More and more people are being raised without religion now than at any point in American history. So if you look at the data for people coming of age, 18 to 25 year olds, we asked them what their religion was growing up. Over a third of them today say they grew up with no religious affiliation at all. It used to be 10 or 12%. So we're seeing people being second and third generation nuns now. So trying to reach out to that group is an entirely different proposition than like church literature 30 or 40 years ago when people were generically Christian and kind of said, oh, I'm a Christian because of my father, grandfather, whatever. Now, a huge chunk of Americans saying, I just don't know anything about religion. I don't know anything about Jesus or the Bible or the Gospels or the Old Testament. So you have to kind of approach spirituality and approach religion in a completely different way when people are coming at it with a completely different set of skills and tools and background and knowledge that they don't have today that they had 20 or 30 years ago.
No, that's great. So you've already alluded to this a little bit. When we're thinking about trying to reach the nuns, you were alluding to kind of some service activities, taking them to, you know, engaging them, serving them in some way. You also just really alluded to, you got to remember, they probably don't know anything about the Bible. So you've got to watch your terminology, the kind of language you use and that. Let's kind of expand on that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Ways that churches can reach out, can reach the nuns, Christians can reach nuns. How else can that happen?
So theologians think everything in the world's vertical, right? It's between you and God, and all problems can be solved or caused by theological orientation, right? I'm a social scientist primarily, so I think the world's largely horizontal, mm-hmm. which is the most important thing that happens in the church is not the up and down stuff. It's the people sitting next to you in the pews. And actually, I think the most important part of the service is like the 10 or 15 minutes before and their 10 or 15 minutes after the service. That's when people talk to each other, you know, talk about what they're dealing with, ask for help, you know, reach out to the pastor, you know, ask for all those kind of things happen before and after. So mm-hmm. I think churches need to think a lot more horizontally going forward and a lot less vertically. Unfortunately, pastors, you know, go to get an MDiv where they're basically, you know, taught to think everything is about you and God. But I would argue that a lot of people come to church for wrong reasons, mm-hmm. right? They go because of free food and giveaways and free childcare and after school programs and free coats and all those things. I think that's the way that you get people in. My favorite thing to say is a lot of people come to church for the wrong reason, but they stay for the right reason.
That's right? Good.
So, you know, be welcoming, be open. So carnivals, festivals, potlucks, bounce houses, you know, basketball gym, free open gym, you know, all those kind of things that just get people in without any sort of obligation to like fill out a contact card or get preached to or, you know, have a serve. None of that stuff. Just let people, especially in a post-COVID world, right, where we're all sort of dying for connection. The church is a great place to offer that connection. So open the doors, open the facilities, and create. I think every church should have a monthly social activity, just completely social with no strings attached, no theology being taught. Just hang out, enjoy each other. And you know what? If 5% of people who go to that stick around, you've had a smashing success. So why not focus there going forward?
Excellent. And so really, I mean, you're getting at it. It's horizontal, well, and vertical. You know, love your neighbors yourself. Someone mentioned that, you know, so when we really do that, it sure does. A lot of these things happen. They kind of fall into place is what you're really saying. You've got to engage them. They've got to come and be with the people and see folks as the hands and feet of Jesus. Really, I think is what you're saying. People serving them, people that care about them, and belonging, you know, that's part of the whole beliefs, belonging. It's all part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think belonging is actually the most important part of the equation. Like, who are you? When we ask the question, who are you? Really, what I think a lot of people think is, who are my people? You know, who do I throw down with? Like, who do I vote with? Who do I want to hang out with? Like, if I had to hang out with anyone, is it this group? Is it that group? And I think that tells us a lot about how people are and who they are. While people saying they're nothing in particular, I think that's actually telling us something really important about them. It's that I'm not anti-religion, but I'm also not pro-religion either. I'm sort of in this mushy middle, and I'm also willing to be persuaded to go either direction. So I think that's why the Nothing in Particular is such an interesting group, because they're refusing to say I'm an atheist or agnostic, but they're also refusing to say I'm a Protestant or a Catholic. So that tells us something, that they're sort of in this, we call it liminal space, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's kind of like this thin space between one thing and the other thing. They live in that liminal space, and they're looking, they're persuadable. They're willing to be pulled one way or the other. It's just who's going to do the pulling.
That's good. Let's cover one more thing before you leave, the whole social desirability aspect. So I sense that you think we've had more nuns than we really know of. So how about unpacking that a little bit for our audience?
Yeah. So there's this concept in social science called social desirability bias, and it's existed forever. I mean, it's like one of the foundational concepts in public opinion research. And basically, it's a fancy way of saying that people lie on surveys. So if we ask you, you know, about something sensitive, right, say like sexual behavior or drug use or views of race or sex, you know, what's going to happen is people are going to give answers that they think the other person wants to hear, the person asking the question wants to hear, and not necessarily the real answer. So we've been asking, you know, this survey since 1972, and we've always been doing it face-to-face to the last wave, by the way. We've been doing it face-to-face. And so what I think's been happening for a long time is people have given the socially desirable answer instead of the real answer. And the way we know that's true, by the way, is there was this really interesting study in Ashtabula County, Ohio, by Kirk Hathaway and his whole team in the 1990s, where they did a survey of 1,000 people, and they asked, how often do you go to church? And about 40% of people said they go to church every week. And they said, you know, let's just check. Like, let's check the work there. And so they got this back in the phone book days. They got the phone book out. They started calling every pastor in Ashtabula County and asked how many people were in church on an average Sunday. Started making tabulations. Some pastors didn't answer, so they drove the parking lots of the next Sunday and counted cars and just did like a quick math calculation, like one car equals 1.5 people or something like that. What they found was that, well, 40% of people on survey said they went to church every week. The actual number is closer to 20%. Of people actually in Ashtabula County went to. So it shows you like there's this huge gap between what people said on surveys and what was actually happening. What I think we're seeing now is we're actually getting closer to the real number of nuns in America, because a lot of surveys have gone online. And we know that when they go online, you'll tell a browser whatever, you know, because there's no social desirability bias. If you're an atheist, you click the atheist box. So the other thing is it's become much more socially acceptable to be a nun now. Mm-hmm. So I think those two things kind of work in tandem to get us closer to the real number of nuns in America. And I've just got to bring this point up. I was reading this great book called The Churching of America by Rodney Stark and Rodney Stark. And they had this really interesting statistic in between 1760 and 1800 in America. So the revolutionary period, 1 in 3 first births of women were less than 9 months after they got married. So basically 1 in 3 women were, you know, had a baby got pregnant before they got married, but only about 20% of people went to church every Sunday, right? So this myth that we've always been super religious and now that we're less religious is actually much more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure we've ever were really as religious as a lot of people thought we were, but I think we're actually getting closer to seeing the real picture now. And in the book I talk about, the first step in recovery is realizing you have a problem and facing it completely. And I think we're much closer to facing the problem as it exists, not how we hope it would, but what actually exists on the ground now, because social desirability bias has waned significantly in the last couple of years.
So if we just summarize that, hey, things are not that different perhaps than we're just more aware of it.
Yep.
And perhaps in a better position to deal with it and address it than we have been in the past.
Yep. Yep.
Well, hey, thank you for joining us today. And how can people, they can go to at Ryan Burge for Twitter. Is that right?
Yeah. At Ryan Burge is sort of the center of my online world. I tweet graphs out basically every day. One, you know, I try not to do too many, but like one or two or three a day, try to get a conversation going. You can buy The Nuns, which we just talked about, where they came from, who they are, where they're going, right there. Fortress Press, it came out almost a year ago now. So it's been doing really well. And then the new book, which I'll hold up right now, which is 20 Myths About Religion and Politics in America, that comes out on March the 1st of 2022. So it actually is shipping from Amazon right now, though. So if you buy a copy from Amazon, you'll get it in like 2 days. So it's out there in the world. That's hardcover, 250 pages. 20 myths, they're all self-contained, right? So you can read myth 7, then myth 3, then myth 20, and they all, you know, they all make sense in their own little world there. So you don't have to read the book from start to finish. 65 graphs, about 60,000 words, plenty of stuff. Some are just religion and politics. Some are just religion by itself. So things like evangelicalism is in decline. America is a lot less religious than we were 30 years ago. Both those things are, you know, are myths. So a lot of data stuff. If you like data, you're going to love the book. And you can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Burge. You can also go to my personal website, ryanburge.net. And my contact information is very easy to find online. So if you want to reach out to me, feel more than free to shoot me an email or hit me with a DM on Twitter. I'd be happy to talk to you.
All right. Hey, thanks, Ryan. Thanks for joining us today, my friend.
Thanks, Eddie.
We want to thank all of you who've joined us today. We encourage you to like this on social media, share it with someone else. And remember, we truly are better when we work together.